The letter usually arrives on an ordinary Tuesday. It is not dramatic. There is no knock at the door, no blue lights, just a plain envelope with a Department for Work and Pensions logo, inviting you to attend an interview under caution at a Job Center Plus office in 11 days' time. There is a reference number, a room number, and a line explaining that you may bring a solicitor. For most people, that letter is the first time they realize a benefit fraud investigation has been running sometimes for months without their knowledge. If that describes your situation, or you suspect a claim of yours is being looked at, this guide walks through what actually happens during a benefit fraud investigation in the UK. Who investigates, what powers they have, what an interview under caution involves, and what the realistic outcomes are. It is written to demystify a process that is deliberately opaque and to help you understand where you stand before you make decisions that are difficult to undo. What counts as benefit fraud in the UK? Benefit fraud is not simply being overpaid. Every year, the benefits system pays out money it should not have, and only a portion of that is criminal. The distinction matters enormously because it decides whether you owe a debt or face a criminal record. Fraud, claimant error, and official error. The DWP itself splits incorrect payments into three categories. Fraud, the claimant gave inaccurate or incomplete information, or failed to report a change, could reasonably be expected to know this affected entitlement, and there is evidence or suspicion of dishonest intent. Claimant error, the same failure to report or the same inaccurate information, but with no evidence or suspicion of dishonesty. Official error, the department, a local authority or HMRC got it wrong, and nobody outside that organization materially contributed. The scale is worth understanding, because it puts your case in context. In the financial year ending 2026, the DWP paid roughly £308.6 billion in benefits and estimated that 3.2% of that, about £9.9 billion, was overpaid. Of that, an estimated £6.8 billion was attributed to fraud, £2 billion to claimant error, and £1.1 billion to official error. In other words, overpayments are common, and a significant share of them are not fraud at all. Investigators know this, so should you. The offenses behind the label. Benefit fraud is shorthand. In practice, prosecutions in England and Wales are usually brought under one of. Section 111A, Social Security Administration Act 1992, dishonest representation or dishonest failure to notify a change of circumstances. This is triable either way. Section 112, Social Security Administration Act 1992, the lower-level false representation offense, which does not require proof of dishonesty in the same way and is summary only. Section 1, Fraud Act 2006, fraud by false representation or by failing to disclose information, typically reserved for higher value or more organized cases. The choice of charge shapes everything that follows, including the sentencing range and whether the case stays in the magistrate's court. The ALLEGTONS that come up most often. Across the benefits, the DWP measures, a small number of themes dominate. Undeclared earnings or self-employment income. For universal credit, underdeclared earnings has been the single biggest driver of fraud overpayments for years, though it fell to 1.5% of UC expenditure in FYE 2026 from 2.2% the year before. Living together, allegations that a claimant is living with a partner as a couple without declaring it. Undeclared capital, savings, inheritances, property or lump sums pushing a claimant over the capital limit. Capital accounted for more than £4 in every £10 overpaid on housing benefit in FYE 2026. Functional needs on disability benefits. Failing to report an improvement in a condition. This is now the dominant PIP overpayment reason, accounting for more than £7 in every £10 overpaid on PIP. Being abroad for longer than the rules allow. Earnings, living together, and capital together accounted for over £6 in every £10 overpaid to fraud on universal credit in FYE 2026. Who IMVSTGTS and how cases begin. The IMVSTGTNG, BODIS. Most benefit fraud investigations are run by the DWP's Counter Fraud, Compliance and Debt Directorate through Fraud Investigation Officers, FIOs. Where housing benefit or council tax reduction is involved, local authority investigators may run the case or work jointly with the DWP. HMRC sits alongside both, sharing PAYE and real-time information data. These bodies share information with each other routinely. A discrepancy flagged by one is very likely to reach the others. How a case starts. Investigations typically begin in one of four ways. A report to the National Benefit Fraud Hotline, often from an ex-partner, a neighbor, a landlord, or a family member. Some are well-founded, many are not. Data matching, automated cross-referencing between DWP, HMRC, local authority, land registry, DVLA, and other datasets. An RTI match showing wages against a claim that declared none is a classic trigger. A routine claim review that throws up something unexplained. A referral from another investigation. For example, an employer under investigation whose payroll records name a claimant. Importantly, an allegation on its own is not evidence. Investigators must have reasonable grounds before they use their formal inquiry powers. New powers under the public AUTHORITIS, fraud, error and recovery, ACT 2025. The landscape shifted in December 2025 when the public authorities, Fraud, Error and Recovery Act received royal assent. The Act created a substantially expanded toolkit being commenced in stages through 2026 and beyond. Key elements include eligibility verification notices, EVNs. Banks and building societies can be required to check account data against eligibility indicators and report back to the DWP. The government's position is that this is limited data, not full bank statements. Critics, including the legal reform charity, Justice, have argued the power can be used without any suspicion of wrongdoing and amounts to routine financial surveillance of benefit recipients. Entry, search, and seizure powers where there is reasonable suspicion of fraud, with a power to use reasonable force in the exercise of those powers. Direct deduction orders, allowing the DWP to recover qualifying benefit debts straight from a bank account without first obtaining a court order. These enforcement powers began rolling out from October 2026 and are aimed principally at people who are no longer on benefits or in PAYE employment and who have not engaged about repayment. Driving license disqualification in the most serious cases of persistent, deliberate evasion of repayment on application to the court. Stage 1, the investigation you don't see. By the time most people learn they are being investigated, the groundwork is largely done. What INVSTGTRS can gather? Depending on the allegation, an investigation may involve financial records, bank and building society statements, transaction histories, evidence of transfers or deposits, employment and earnings data, HMRC RTI records, payroll information, contracts, employer statements, housing and tenancy evidence, tenancy agreements, utility accounts, council tax records, electoral roll entries, witness statements from employers, landlords, neighbors, letting agents, surveillance, used sparingly and typically in cases where physical capability or residence is disputed, open source material, social media posts, photographs, marketplace listings, public profiles. Your benefit may be suspended. Payment can be suspended while inquiries continue. This is an administrative step, not a finding of guilt, and it can be devastating financially. If the investigation ends without a finding against you, suspended entitlement should be restored and arrears paid. Two very different interviews. This is where people most often go wrong. A compliance interview is not conducted under caution. It is a check on your circumstances. It can still generate evidence, and what you say may be recorded, but it is not a criminal interview. An Interview Under Caution, IUC, is a criminal investigative interview conducted under the framework of the Police and Criminal Evidence Act 1984. If you receive a letter using the words, under caution, treat it as the serious step it is. Stage 2, the interview under caution. What happens in the room? The interview is audio recorded, usually on a twin deck machine, and conducted by one or two fraud investigation officers. You will be cautioned the standard formulation warning you that you need not say anything, that failing to mention something you later rely on in court may harm your defense, and that what you do say may be given in evidence. You will then be asked about your claim, your household, your finances, your work, and often intensely personal matters, your relationships, your health, who sleeps where, your rights. You are entitled to legal representation. Bringing a solicitor is not an admission of anything. It is standard practice, and investigators expect it. You have the right to silence, though adverse inferences may be drawn in some circumstances if you later rely on something you did not mention. You are entitled to disclosure before the interview. Your solicitor can ask what the allegation is and what evidence underpins it, and can advise you based on the answer. You are not under arrest and are generally free to leave, though this has consequences. The options your solicitor will discuss. There are broadly three approaches, and the right one depends entirely on the disclosure. Full answers. Where the evidence is thin, the explanation is strong and documented, and answering may end the matter. A prepared statement. Setting out your account in controlled terms, then declining to answer further questions. This protects against adverse inferences while avoiding an unstructured interrogation. No comment. Appropriate where disclosure is inadequate, where the allegation is unclear, or where you are unwell or unable to give a reliable account. Choosing between these without professional advice is a genuine gamble. The interview is often the single most influential piece of evidence in the case. What if you don't attend? Attendance is not compulsory in the way a court summons is. But declining to attend removes your best opportunity to give your account, may prompt investigators to seek police involvement, and may affect your claim. If you cannot attend on the date given, ask to rearrange in writing. Do not simply ignore the letter. Stage 3, the decision. The interview rarely ends the investigation. Answers you give may open new lines of inquiry, and further records may be requested. Once inquiries are complete, two separate decisions are made. The entitlement decision. A DWP decision maker reviews the evidence and determines whether you were entitled to what you were paid, and if not, how much was overpaid and why, fraud, claimant error, or official error. This decision carries appeal rights, and challenging the calculation is often the most productive line of attack. Overpayment figures are frequently wrong, overlong, or fail to offset entitlement you would have had anyway. The sanction decision. Separately, the department decides what action to take. The realistic outcomes are 1. No further action. The explanation holds, or the evidence does not meet the threshold. This happens more often than people expect. 2. Recovery of the overpayment only. You repay, typically by deductions from ongoing benefit, a direct earnings attachment, an agreed payment plan, or from October 2026, a direct deduction order against a bank account. No criminal outcome. 3. An administrative penalty. Offered as an alternative to prosecution where there is evidence that would support a charge. The penalty is set at 50% of the overpayment, subject to a minimum of £350 and a cap of £5,000, and is payable on top of repaying the overpayment. Accepting one does not require an admission of fraud and does not create a criminal record. Under the 2025 Act, the government's stated position is that where someone accepts an administrative penalty and remains eligible for benefit, the additional loss of benefit sanction will no longer be applied, reserving that sanction for cases ending in conviction. 4. Referral for prosecution to the Crown Prosecution Service or the Crown Office and Procurator Fiscal Service in Scotland. This is the route for higher value, prolonged, repeated or organized cases, and for anyone who refuses an administrative penalty. An administrative penalty can look like an easy exit. It sometimes is. But it is a decision with financial and evidential consequences, and it should never be accepted without advice, particularly where the underlying overpayment figure is disputed. If the case goes to court, likely SENTNCS. Sentencing depends on the charge, the amount, the duration, and your culpability. Section 111, ASSAA 1992, up to 6 months on summary conviction, up to 7 years on conviction on indictment. Section 112, SSAA 1992, summary only, with a maximum of 3 months imprisonment and/or a fine. Section 1, Fraud Act 2006, up to 10 years on indictment. Those are maximums, not expectations. In practice, courts apply the Sentencing Council's fraud guideline, weighing culpability, was this a sustained deception or an opportunistic failure to report, against harm, the sum involved. A first-time defendant with a modest overpayment, full repayment underway, and genuine mitigation is far more likely to receive a community order or a fine than custody. Larger and more sophisticated cases can attract immediate imprisonment and, in some, proceeds of Crime Act confiscation proceedings. Common defenses and lines of challenge. No dishonesty. The central issue in most Section 111A cases. Confusion, poor advice, chaotic circumstances, and genuine misunderstanding are all real answers. No duty to notify. The change relied on did not in law have to be reported. Factual dispute, most often on living together, where the legal test is multifactorial and far more challengeable than claimants assume. The overpayment calculation is wrong. Wrong period, wrong figures, no offset for underlying entitlement. Capacity, mental health or vulnerability, affecting both the offense and the appropriate disposal. Delay and abuse of process, where an unexplained lapse of years has prejudiced the defense. How long does a benefit fraud investigation take? There is no published time limit within which the DWP must finish. Some inquiries resolve in weeks, others run well over a year. Duration depends on the number of benefits involved, the period under review, how much financial evidence must be obtained, and whether third parties respond quickly. A long investigation is not evidence that a decision has been made against you. It usually means records are still being gathered. One point does have a legal edge. Proceedings for the summary Section 112 offense must generally be started within 3 months of the date on which evidence sufficient to justify a prosecution came to the Secretary of State's knowledge, or 12 months from the offense, whichever is later. No such restriction applies to Section 111A if your case involves significant delay. That timing is worth examining. Steps to protect yourself. Do not ignore correspondence. Silence narrows your options. Get advice before the interview, not after. The interview is the pivot point of the whole case. Gather your own documents. Bank statements, tenancy agreements, medical records, payslips, correspondence with the DWP. Contemporaneous evidence of what you told them and when is powerful. Write down your timeline while it is fresh, dates of changes, calls made, letters sent. Do not delete anything, including social media. Deletion looks like consciousness of guilt. Do not discuss the case with the person who may have reported you. Check the overpayment figure rather than accepting it. Errors are common. Be careful about accepting an administrative penalty before the calculation has been scrutinized. Final thoughts. A benefit fraud investigation follows a set path: evidence gathering, interview under caution, then decisions on entitlement and sanction. At every stage, there is something that can be done to change the outcome. The costly mistake is treating the early steps as routine admin. The compliance letter, the request for bank statements, the informal chat, that is when a case is still shapeable. Once the file reaches the CPS, the useful decisions have mostly been made. If you have had a letter about your claim, been called to an interview under caution, or been told you were overpaid, Get advice before you reply. Stuart Miller Solicitors defends clients at DWP and counsel interviews under caution, challenges overpayment decisions, and fights benefit fraud prosecutions in the magistrates and crown courts. Contact us today for a free, confidential, no obligation chat before you say anything to an investigator. Frequently asked question. Will I definitely be PROSSUTED if I'm INVSTJTED for benefit fraud? No, a significant proportion of investigations end in no further action or in recovery of an overpayment without any criminal sanction. Prosecution is generally reserved for higher value, prolonged or repeated cases, or where an administrative penalty is refused. Can the DWP look at MY bank account? Yes, in defined circumstances. Investigators can compel financial institutions to provide information as part of an investigation, and under the public authorities, fraud, error, and recovery. Act 2025 banks can also be required to check account data against eligibility indicators and report back. This is one of the most contested aspects of the new regime. Should I take a solicitor too? A DWP interview under caution? Yes, an interview under caution is a criminal investigative interview conducted under PACE, and what you say there is frequently the most important evidence in the case. Attending with a specialist is normal and expected, not a sign of guilt. Does accepting an administrative penalty give me a criminal record? No, an administrative penalty is an alternative to prosecution, accepted without an admission of fraud, and it does not result in a conviction. It is still a serious financial commitment, 50% of the overpayment on top of repaying it, and should be considered with advice. What if the overpayment was genuinely a mistake? Then it should be classified as claimant error, not fraud, and the appropriate outcome is recovery rather than any criminal sanction. Proving the absence of dishonesty is exactly what a properly prepared response to an investigation is for, and it is far easier to establish before charges are brought than afterwards.